Bobby Rivers, alone in a world that doesn't want him. We can rebuild him, make him better than he was before. Better, stronger, blacker. Mocha.
Shake it.
If you want to grind it, wait till you refine it.
If you want to bump it with a trumpet.
Get yourself a gimmick and you too can be a star.
You've got a gimmick. Take a look how different we are. If you want to make it twinkle while you shake it.
If you want to grind it, wait till you've refined it.
And if you want to bump it with a trumpet.
Get yourself a gimmick and you too can be a star.
Oh, my God.
There is a place for that in this show.
Yes. I'm trying to think. Where else are people going to hear that?
Where else can you hear it?
Let's just go from here.
Okay. Hey, folks, you're back for more Mocha. And we are so glad you are. I am Bobby Rivers. I am so glad you're joining us. Mocha, I think you know by now, stands for Man of a Certain You and Age. And we say, oh, man. It's man. I'm here, as usual, with my fabulous friend and producer, Keith Price. We have just been going down memory lane of show tunes. Gypsy.
Come on, man.
Man.
Come on. That's the song. That damn song, honestly, gotta get a gimmick.
Gotta get a gimmick.
The best freaking, almost as good as Let Me Entertain You by the time you get to Act Two, that version of Let Me Entertain You.
That is a brilliant score. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Julie Stein. Stephen Sondheim on the lyrics.
Uh-huh.
Arthur Lawrence on the direction.
And Arthur Lawrence, and you better do what I say.
Exactly. Not very known to be nice. But had quality people work for him. Merm lived.
God, she did.
She lived for him. But again, like...
Did you ever see it on stage?
I have seen a production of it on stage, but not any of the recent ones like with... No, Take It Back. I saw Patti LuPone when she did it. Oh, my God. And the night that I went, it was... They said, you know... In the role of Gypsy. And everybody was like, everyone was like, oh no. And they were like, because there was no piece of paper in the program. And they said, Patti LuPone will be wearing orthopedic shoes. So there will be no character heel for Mama Rose.
I saw Tyne Daly do it.
Shut up.
I wanted to stand on the seat and give her a standing ovation.
Wow.
And here's the best part. I was sitting next to an older couple, and we're just at the end of Everything's Coming Up Roses. Mm-hmm. We're like, yay! The couple had and I started chatting with them, and they said, we saw Ethel Merman do it. And I went, okay, in comparison, how's this? And went, you know, Merm could belt a song. She could sing on Broadway and you could hear her in Burbank. They said, but she was not the actress that Tyne Daly is. So the older couple said, we just realized that Everything's Coming Up Roses is the beginning of the nervous breakdown. That's Rose's turn.
Exactamundo.
Oh, man.
Isn't that fun, though?
It is. And when you think, you think about those songs and you think about the dark undercurrent that each one has. Like you can take You'll Never Get Away From Me and sing it as a pop tune, which many did, like mm-hmm. Steve and Edie or Jack Jones. But then when you think about the mother's interior motives, her dark motives, it takes on a different attitude.
See? And again, I credit that to the genius of Stephen Sondheim and the lyrics.
Yes.
Because, you know, the story ultimately in the end was by the time that they got ready to do Gypsy the musical,
yeah,
Merman was kind of having had a bad run. She'd had a couple of shows that did not do very well.
And she's in middle age.
And she's in her middle ages. And, you know, it's Broadway in the 50s and 60s where it was not your friend if you were not cute ingenue.
Right.
And so she, when they approached her to do this musical, she was like, I'm not working with no new person. That's why Stephen Sondheim originally was going to come on and do music and lyrics, I believe. And she's like, I ain't singing nobody's song that I don't real know, and I don't know him. And so
Gershwin's dead. Irving, you're not Irving Berlin.
And Cole Porter broke his back. So I ain't expecting no fabulous numbers. So
that's right.
So y'all better get it right.
And in Cole Porter's case, I think Merm personally went out and shot the horse
for fucking up her career. Shit.
What do you mean landing on Cole?
Do you know I had seven numbers with this man? Seven. No. So she. So when it came around the time for her to do this, and asked her to do this, she was like, insistent, I need to talk to somebody. I need to have somebody that I know playing, music. Yeah. And that's how Julie Stein got involved. But then it's the lyrical genius that is Stephen Sondheim that, you know, any theater person will tell you. And it took me a long time to really get why people love Stephen Sondheim so much. Because, you know, we black people from where we from, he ain't speaking to us generally.
Generally.
And, you know, and then to you have lived, puff, puff, and you go back and you look at some of those lyrics that he's written, there's some genius philosophy from a guy who was living his closeted, whatever dreams he had going on.
And he had high drama with mama in his life.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the idea of how that show, specifically Gypsy, kind of really helped capture what you were just saying about his relationship with his mother and how he probably put a lot of in those lyrics. But like the genius of some of those songs, like you're saying, playing on a different level, because I remember when I heard Gotta Get a Gimmick, which is what we were using for our little tease, because I've decided that this is going to be like an amuse-bouche moment about Gypsy. We're going to move on to something else.
Fine.
Because I think that's perfect.
Fine.
But like when I heard Gotta Get a Gimmick for the first time and realized exactly what it meant, it changed the way that I thought about myself as a performer. Mm-hmm. Because I realized then that I'm a large black gay man who loves him some musicals, can do a little dancing, can do a little singing.
Right.
And that was going to have to be my gimmick. Because at the time when I started, you never saw any of those.
Right.
Because as much as we love our Ken Pages, Ken Page was not necessarily out.
That is, there's wisdom in that number.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like, you're more than just a mimic when you've got a gimmick.
Right.
And it was like, so I had to figure out what my gimmick was. And it took me a while to kind of zero in on that. But I was like, how you doing? Mm-hmm. And so, again, here we are, this is African-American black queen finding talking about Gypsy and finding something in it that no one can deny is not a universal theme.
You know, Liza really wanted to do that part. Did I tell you that?
No.
I had interviewed Liza Minnelli when I was on VH1, did a special one-hour interview with her. And on the strength of that interview, that's how I got my talk show. And we were off camera because she didn't want to say this on camera. But she said she really wanted to play Rose and Gypsy. And I think that had he lived, Fosse was interested in doing a new film version of it. And Liza had really researched the mother. When she was talking, she was not the Liza that you see on the air. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, a lot of people saw the movie, and they kind of had a tendency to think that Mama Rose was an extension of Annie Mae because Rosalind Russell did the part. But she said, you think about it. She said, any woman who calls her child a no-talent ox, as she does in the last act, is not a nice person. There is drama there. And she said, America is coming into its own almost, you know, of that decade. And, and just the whole psychology of strip houses, we're talking to old strippers that some of them said, you know, up at the, when they had the box seats, like some of the guys would be sitting in the box seats with newspapers in their laps because you could figure out what they were doing mm-hmm. while the dames were on stage stripping. So that is why your daughter going into burlesque or being a stripper was like, that's like, oh, that's a gateway to being a hooker.
It's not any different than it is today.
Right. So that's
look at that art imitating life. Go figure.
So there's all sorts of parent-child tension in there. And if you think about it, there's one song in there that we laugh at. But if you really look at it, and I really looked at it again in the Tyne Daly revival, was Have an Egg Rolled, Mr. Goldstone. Mm-hmm. Not the lyrics of that song, but you remember how your hormones are spinning like those giant cups of tea at Disneyland when you're a teenager.
Right.
Rose's got teen boys mm-hmm. living in the same room with her teen daughters.
Yes.
And there's no sense of privacy, but she's like, I'm trying to get Mr. Goldstone to pay attention to me. It's like, girl.
She's got it, that is one of those things where you look at that role and it's more than just this moment. It's more than just, yo, bass, wow.
It's more to
it. It's way so much more to it. And I think that in the end, that's one of the reasons why that is one of my favorite musicals.
And Liza said, honestly, she said, I can't do it because she said, the boys, I think she was referring to Mr. Sondheim and Mr. Lawrence, who was still alive at the time. She said, they kind of see me as the, little town.
Yeah.
And
some people.
Yeah.
She can.
She wanted to go in to her own life and maybe bring up some of her relationship with her own mother.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic because that's who Arthur Lawrence wanted for the film version.
Originally.
He wanted Judy Garland.
Wow.
But Warner Brothers wouldn't give him Judy. And you can hear this. He was on NPR Fresh Air. If you Google that, you can hear the interview. He said, we wanted Judy Garland, but Jack L. Warner was still alive. And he said, no, she's 15 pounds overweight. I said, she's playing a middle-aged mother who ages 20 years. Who's going to care? He said, so we wound up with Roz Russell, dubbed, and wearing two-tone shoes.
Again, don't mess with no old queen, honey. That's the lesson for everybody with Arthur Lawrence, honey. I'm living that dream. Because that's what we hear, Mocha, honey, because overfitted don't care.
We don't care. We
don't care no more, honey.
Speaking of one of the gypsies, Stephen Sondheim made a movie called 1941. And the critics hated it and the public didn't go see it.
Stephen Sondheim?
No, Stephen Sondheim. I'm sorry.
I was like, what?
Child, thank you for being here. I meant Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg. I had it like right first name, wrong last name.
Steven Spielberg. The Rolodex in your head stopped.
So Spielberg makes a movie called 1941. I'm sure you know about
Don Belushi, yes.
Right. So I have a buddy who was involved in the production, and they were on location, and it's not one of Spielberg's best, but there are moments of it that I loved. And the moment that I love the most is the big 1940s swing dance number in the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Right.
And you see in 1940s attire, Penny Marshall mm-hmm. and Patti LuPone. So Patty has a small role in it, and it's in that sequence.
Wow.
So they finish, and people were asking, what are you doing next? Patty, what are you doing next? I'm going back to the city. My agent's got an audition for me for this thing called Evita.
Wow.
The rest is history. Did you see Patti LuPone on the Grammys? That's all you can hear in unison from West Hollywood to New York City. Honey, in unison, we all went, yes!
Patty, yes. Honey, that was a class. If you are a musical theater person, if you are somebody that loves you just the musical in general, or if you are just a fan of being able to recognize when you are seeing a performance that is just genius.
Right.
Patti LuPone at the Grammys this year, recognizing Andrew Lloyd Webber, singing that damn Don't Cry For Me Argentina in the Madison Square Garden on that thing with the lights and the front lighting and the back lighting. Honey, that bitch served.
She didn't just sing. She acted it.
She honey,
children. She taught you how to act a song.
I had to let it happen.
Ooh.
And then even in the dramatic moments of the song where there was no lyrics, she was acting. Honey, she was giving you legs.
She was.
Then she gives you the almost that Jesus Christ, I'm about to be crucified, fall at the
arm extension and held it.
Honey.
Held it.
Honey.
You know what? And you think, and I'm so glad she did that. Mm. She gave you that performance because now we have it on record because, you know, she was interested. It was a Broadway hit. She was interested in doing the movie. Michelle Pfeiffer was interested in doing the movie. Meryl Streep was interested in doing the movie. But producers went with a non-actress instead. So.
Hey. Hey. What? We cannot come for Madonna for doing the movie version of Evita. Only in that.
Yes.
She did get a Golden Globe.
And so did Pia Zadara.
And Lady Gaga. You see?
Oh, we're just having fun. The and you know what? And in the 15 minutes, you learn more about showbiz history than you did from, like, Two Dope Queens. Ooh!
Well, because I will say this isn't their genre.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
However, still more interesting.
So, we talked about work of Stephen Sondheim.
Mm-hmm.
And I also mentioned Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first I mentioned Sondheim, but then you corrected me. Okay, so I want to ask you about something that would involve both Stevens. What do you think about the news that Steven Spielberg wants to remake West Side Story?
Wow, you know, I have mixed emotion.
As do I.
Because, one, I have this feeling that he could... honestly, bring a kind of eye to the filmmaking process that was not ultimately available that could do something more insightful.
You know that his heart is in the right place and for diversity and inclusion.
Exactly.
Because he's got a racially mixed family.
Right. That's right. And so, but...
But that production... Here are the questions that I have. First of all, that movie, the stars were in complete alignment. That movie version is a work of cinematic art, in my opinion.
Yes.
It was kissed by magic.
Yes.
Everything about it.
Every
the way
frame.
They rearranged some numbers for the movie mm-hmm. and really opened it up. It deserved those 10 Academy Awards that it got, including Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people will say, "What the lead characters who were playing Puerto Ricans, the late Natalie Wood,
and
George Chakiris. Natalie Wood was Russian, mm-hmm. and George Chakiris is Greek. And I think that's what they want to change now.
I think so.
Yeah.
But the bottom line to me is, you can change it, sure, and you can make it seemingly more fair, I guess, because there are so many beautiful Latino actors that would work the shish kebab out of some Bernardo. And they would, you know, some fierce Latinos.
The movie did have a lot of Latino dancers in it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know.
They were there. They were there.
And that and the black couple that's over
that's way in the back
and against the wall. Probably Dominican.
Dominican. Because I know the couple he's talking about, because I've noticed them too. They're like way in the back of the dance at the gym. Why aren't they dancing? They're at the gym for the dance, but they ain't dancing. You have to look to the left of the screen, and they're in the back. And you know that both of them, through the decades to come, said, "Well, you know, we were in West Side Story."
Wait. This is how I know that you and I at some point in time had some of the same moments of upbringing, because when you are one of those kids, especially when I grew up in Texas and I was taking these classes where I was like literally the only black person in the class,
uh-huh.
I always remember the first day of school a couple of years into that process of always watching that door hoping somebody else was going to come in. So you always had that eye to look for, where's that other black person?
Please.
And so I'm thinking about how and when we both discovered that black couple way back. At what place in our development, we were like, hey, look, that's
It's a black
couple. It's a black couple.
I see black people.
For real.
But I mean.
Okay. And also, contractually and legally, mm-hmm. would a remake have to adhere to the Jerome Robbins choreography from the movie?
More than likely, I would imagine that Arthur Lawrence, in his will, because I'm sure he's got a big piece of that as well.
Yeah.
And I am almost clear that Jerome Robbins believes in owning and having his choreography. If they could still recreate his choreography, I would not be mad. The problem that I have ultimately in the end is I don't know if I want it to be redone.
Okay, now, when I read the news, and when I saw that, okay, it's not, you know, it's not just somebody making, you mm-hmm. know, it's not a false report on Twitter or whatever, because several reports right. came out. I went, oh, Spielberg. Screenplay by Tony Kushner.
Mm-hmm.
I went, okay, West Side Story, but that is such a classic. That movie is a piece of my heart. And I thought, you know, Stephen, what about, because I'm sure you want a nice, racially diverse cast, what about giving us a movie version of another Broadway show? One that could have white, black, Latino, and Asian actors. Why don't you do Miss Saigon? That was a Broadway hit, and nobody ever turned that into a movie. Or,
I mean, it recently ended its return to Broadway just back in January.
Or do
it was amazing.
Or do a new movie version of South Pacific, and do it the way that the Broadway revival was done, because it really got into a lot of the gritty racial elements that were in the source material by Michener.
I don't know. I think that I want to see. It's hard for me because I think that I am very attached to West Side Story because, like I've said before on lots of other moments, that was the show that I think defined my love of musicals in a way that I wasn't cognizant of, if that
right,
makes sense.
Right.
Because I remember being sick watching the Million Dollar Movie on Channel 13 that Sunday morning and sat through that thing from 9 to 12, boo-hooing by the time that thing was over and not really sure why I was crying. It was like, everybody's dancing and it seems so happy, but then they're shooting and then the king, and then the stabbing and then the thinging and the dancing and then all of a sudden they're going to rape her. And there was so much going on.
So that, much.
For a 9-year-old to take in on cold medicine. So... But I remember distinctly that was the moment where I was like, oh, wow, the singing and dancing and stuff and how that honestly stayed beyond The Wizard of Oz as a child. You know
yes.
what I mean? It stayed beyond the stuff that we saw as kids. It was like there was a different kind of message that I got, even though I was only 9.
So, but also we connected to it because being kids of color.
Yep. I understood why white people didn't like us. I lived in Texas.
Man, so, I felt it. I was, you know, I said, ooh, I know what the sharks are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when Mom went to work, I took one of her scarves, went into the bathroom, full-length mirror, put it on my head, and turned around and said, don't you touch me. You tell her you're American, buddy. That better not have found out about that, Maria, and shot her.
Ooh, honey.
Yes, I was all about... Rita Moreno.
Honey, a boy like that will kill your brother. Forget that boy and find another.
One of your own kind. Stick to your own kind.
But I couldn't be the Broadway aficionado that I call myself to be and not pay homage to the original Anita, a.k.a. Miss Cheetah Rivera, who tells the story about how they got the energy out of her to sing that song. And it was by a young assistant director named, oh my God, I did a podcast about there was a young Isaac Klein wrote this book about his mentor, who at the time, through his years of directing, was like the assistant director on West Side Story, the musical.
Yeah.
And he is the one who gave Cheetah Rivera the direction on how to find the anger moment that turns into a boy like that who kill your brother. That's that man is the one who gave Cheetah that moment of that direction that turned that scene into what we now make fun of liberally.
We love Rita Moreno.
We love us some Rita, but it's
Cheetah. Do you know if Cheetah was ever offered a chance to repeat the film, repeat the role in the film?
From what I remember, no. She was not given the option.
Uh-huh.
But I think she tested because it's only fair.
Yeah.
But they, by that time, remember though, Rita Moreno had already been through the system and she was. Yeah,
that's right.
She was already a well known Latina.
Singing in the Rain.
That's it.
The Zelda. King and I.
Top 10. Wasn't she Top 10
yeah.
or somebody?
Yeah.
She was one of, so she already had her foot in the door of being the Latina actress of the time. Even though, what was her name? Not Dorothy L'Amour. Who was the dark? Was it Jane Russell? Was she Latina? No.
There was
somebody that like snuck in and we didn't find out she was Latina until way later.
No, but you know, no.
I'm thinking of Linda Carter.
Are you thinking of? Because she played Rita Hayworth. She played a Latina, but she was. Yes.
That's who it was. Rita Hayworth.
She played Rita Hayworth in a TV movie bio. And I know this.
Wow. But I forget now what our original point was. But again, Rita Moreno, this whole remake, I like the intention. I like the intention. And I know that Steven Spielberg will be very cautious about it, but that's also the part that I'm also worried about.
Yeah.
Is he going to be too cautious? I'm also worried about, like, will they go back to the original ending in West Side Story, which was boom, 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 everybody's dead at the end. You know? let's keep back to our original source, Romeo and Juliet. Lord,
yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, that has an awful turn.
It didn't really...
Just saying.
If oh,
they,
God.
If they want to do...
Yeah, that's a... Yeah.
Because the thing is that when Tony hears that Bernardo... that Chino kills her...
Maria lives at the end.
Right.
Right. Which works for us, the audience.
Right.
Because I know I will watch that and in my mind, she lives and she eventually becomes like a civil rights activist in her community. And in years,
well, that's a nice way to put it.
I know, right?
I'm thinking. At the end, and, they didn't want white Natalie Woods being seen carried away by some Puerto Rican bandwagon, you know? Because say what you want, it was still 1961.
Oh,
okay,
yeah, that's true.
Hence, Natalie Wood playing Maria, the Puerto Rican. A.K.A. Carol Lawrence on Broadway playing Maria the Puerto Rican. I'm just saying.
Right.
There's a lot of it that went on. That's why they had
Yeah, that's true. That's how it was at the time.
So I think in the end, you know, there are worthwhile Latina actresses now that would kill. I know that, what's her name? I love her. Christella Alonso.
Uh-huh.
I know she comes from a musical theater background, but I think that if she... could, she would probably be a perfect person to play Anita if she really could sing,
mm-hmm.
because she's an angry Mexican woman. She can conserve.
Yes.
She can serve you some Anita realness.
Yes, yes, yes.
So you hear that, Christella Alonso? I'm pushing for you.
I'm
to
all
go
for
out.
The Latino representation.
I want you to be Anita in this West Side Story. That's my goal for her.
And can we end this? I got to give a shout out to someone who gave us Latina representation on TV for a year.
Yes.
I was so proud of her. I loved watching her on the air. Tiffany Vasquez.
Jess.
Tiffany was the weekend host for a year on TCM, Turner Classic Movies. Turner Classic Movies decided not to renew her contract. According to Tiffany on Twitter, she will be utilized in other areas, but she won't be on the air. I loved seeing her because, as I said, representation matters.
Absolutely.
So she's gone, so that means that the remaining hosts on TCM are three white guys. Ben Mankiewicz,
mm-hmm.
Alec Baldwin on weekends, and Eddie Muller on weekends, because the Puerto Rican host is no longer going to be doing segments.
Wow. Okay.
So, here you have it.
Well, again, good luck, Steven Spielberg. I'm sure you don't need any help from me.
No, but Steven Spielberg, you know, there's somebody you can put in if you're going to do a remake of it. And put Tiffany in it.
And you know what else?
What?
I better see anybody be a real lesbian.
Hello.
In this goddamn f-ing remake shebang.
Okay, daddy-o. Yes, let anybody be a
if anybody is not a lesbian that I know is a lesbian, and I'm not assuming is a lesbian, I need to see her with her girlfriend that she gives a big kiss to before she goes off to the big fight.
Steven Spielberg's West Side Story, mm-hmm. also starring Tig Notaro as anybody's.
You see there?
There.
Cristela Alonso as Anita. Tig Notaro as anybody.
And because we love him so much, Danny Burstein is Officer Krupke.
No. I want him to be Doc. Pharmacy. He has
Danny
to be Doc.
Burstein would make a brilliant Doc.
Y mira lo también. Let me explain something to you, Mr. Steven Spielberg.
Why do you kids fight like there's a war on?
Porque let me explain something to you about Monsieur Danny Burstein. Danny Burstein es también un Latino. Yes.
That's right.
So you could sneak him in as Doc.
Sneak him in.
Get that white guy look. Pero this time you also hiring Latino también. Booyah.
Hot damn. You He's get Doc and some Costa Rican flavor.
Now.
You have Steven Spielberg call us.
Yes.
Damn.
Okay.
I'm out. I'm done.
I feel like we need to go out with something. You know what? We need to remember that you and I, we are in America.
I want to be in America.
Now.
Okay, here. I'll give you that. I like the island, Manhattan.
I know you do.
Yeah!
Shut up, honey.
Thank you for listening to Mocha.
Thank you.
I like the island, Manhattan.
I know you do.
Smoke on your pipe and put that in.
Honey,
for a small fee in America.